Let me tell you, don't trust anyone in business with the British. The British will ruin Arabs.
Yes, they killed Princess Diana, Allah yarhamha.
Rahmatullah alayha. You know what they did to that beautiful princess?
I think she was in a car accident, right?
It wasn't an accident. I mean, it was, but it wasn't.
She fell in love with an Egyptian. That is not an accident.
Then the queen murdered them both, huh?
Yeah.
She'd rather kill a princess than see her be with an Arab. We know what happened, you know? It was on liveleaks.com.
She was going to speak on behalf of the Palestinians. Mm-hmm. And the next minute, boom, she's gone.
So that's a scene from the popular show Romy, where our guest Laith Neckley's character, Uncle Nasimi, shares a well-known conspiracy in the Arab world. And one day, we'll discuss just how true this conspiracy might be. Who knows? That's also the theme song for the show Romy, a show that if you've been following me, know that I've been covering for quite some time, and will continue to cover. And no matter what our respective opinions are on the show Romy, nonetheless, it is a breakthrough show for Muslims and Arabs. That alone makes it deserving to be studied and talked about on this podcast. So I will continue to try to discover and get insider scoop on the creative minds and voices that are trying to portray our image as Muslims and Arabs in America. Stick around for the Ansari podcast. Yo, Laith, my name's Mahmoud, by the way. Just to give you a proper introduction, dog. Appreciate you coming on.
Of course, man.
I'm excited.
So excited, man.
I'm glad you came on, man. Romy is such a cool show. Like, can I ask you something I've been curious about?
Yeah.
With Mo Imer and Rami, because they have been absolutely groundbreaking. Mm-hmm. And you've even mentioned before that actors like yourself and others have been the framework or the real the breakthrough before even the breakthrough.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think even happened that changed that allowed Rami and Mo Imer and others such as yourself come out and Miss Marvel?
I think there was already a shift in the industry in general. It's just very slow, even though it feels like monumental. It's very slow, but it's in the right direction. And then, you know, Rami is like an innovator. He's like a genius, and he kept on pushing and pushing till he was given that chance. And when people saw what he did, it was a game changer. I mean, there's even an article that said, like, literally Rami paved the way for Miss Marvel to get made in a way. It started that push. So, and I mean, the times are changing. So.
And what direction do you think they're changing?
It's getting better, you know, and we want it to keep on going to the point where you'll just watch a show and you'll interview me or interview someone else and start talking about the show and the plot and like the device without even talking about the culture and talking about anything else, because it just becomes another show. Instead of describing a show, like, even though they describe Rami, oh, the Muslim show is completely wrong because it's not a Muslim show. It's about a show about a Muslim, you know, but that's okay. We will take that until we get to the point where, yeah, this show about this kid growing up in Jersey is a Muslim and struggling between faith and blah, blah, blah. And so we need to get there, and we're getting there, you know, take time.
Why did you call Rami a genius and an innovator? What makes you say that, bro?
Oh, because I've known him since he was very young, and his brain works and is just incredible. And he's just like, only someone like Rami could write like an episode like Strawberries, you know, and make it meaningful and funny and have like a 6-7 minute like scene with an imaginary Osama bin Laden and stuff. Like, he's just like, he's so smart. Like, he'll know how to walk that line and yet stay truthful and be smart and provoke thought in people and make you think. You watch an episode and you go, like, you start thinking about so many things, and that's really smart TV. And what he's doing with everything else is doing Mo, and he's doing so many other things. So it's
Mo. He's like, is he a writer on Mo?
He's a co-creator in Mo.
Oh,
yeah, yeah, it's, wow. It's, yeah, yeah, yeah. That's wrong. And he's still barely 30, so it's not even, yeah, you know, he's just getting started, you know what I mean?
MashaAllah, yeah. No, I hope we're all praying for him, and you know, the sky's the limit with that guy. So yeah. MashaAllah. You know what's interesting, man? Every person I've had on who's met Rami, I immediately go, okay, I'm interested. What's Rami like? And every single one of them has the best of things to say about this guy. And so my content seems, if you go back and look at it, like it's promoting Rami and it's like really pro Rami. And it's because like every time I ask about him, people are like, oh, this is this amazing guy. This just, you know, he's brilliant. He's smart. He's an innovator. It's the same stuff. And I'm like, wow, you know, you can't make this stuff up. People don't, you can't buy people's love like that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not gaining anything from that. It's just the truth. I'm already on the show, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
You know?
What's been your favorite? Oh, yeah, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
What's been your favorite show to work on? Or do you not have one?
Oh, it's definitely Rami. I mean, it's the special unity and family atmosphere that we have is like, I've been doing this. I mean, I've been acting between school and everything for 23 years, and I've never, you know, been in that like perfect environment. It's like a perfect bubble. Like we'll go out, we'll have 2 years off between a season, like with COVID. I came back, everyone was the same, and I remembered everyone's name. You know, I could do a job on another show like a week ago, and I'll forget all the names that the people I meet and all that stuff. But it's just like everyone is so close. Everyone loves being there. Yes, it's a job, but everyone really, really loves their job. So it started giving all of us a voice, and it started, as much as I hate using the word, and until we don't use the word, we have to keep on moving forward. It was groundbreaking, you know, until we normalize it when it becomes just another show with a great plot. You know, we're going to continue using that word, but it opened the doors for so many. It opened the doors for other people to have more courage and hope to present their shows, to go pitch shows about, you know, people of color or Muslims or this and that, and try to normalize it, like normalize, because the show in the end is about, yes, he's a Muslim, his family, they're immigrants and stuff like that. But, you know, they have the same problems that everyone else has, you know, because all the problems that we have are all universal. Teens, it doesn't matter where you're in the Middle East, you're Africa, you're here, wherever you are, you all think about sex. It's a fact. But, you know, you have all these things that they're dealt with in different ways. So I think that's a way to look at it, instead of, so the representation is really, 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 really important, because it amplifies all our voices. And it doesn't matter, even when you see us in roles that are not necessarily built around, you know, like I have a movie coming out and I play a lawyer, and his name is Khalil, called Khalil Immigration Law Firm. It has nothing to do with the culture, anything. But that really is important too, to say like, oh, wow, look what they have. You know, and they have this actor too, is also like, you know, Middle Eastern and stuff like that. So I think it really is important. It's very special. It's very special.
What do you even love about acting? Like, what made you want to act?
I really don't know. All I know is that this is what I want to do, and I can't do anything else, you know? And it took me, and it went through stages. Like when I was 20, and I moved to New York, I wanted to be an actor. And I wanted to be an actor like every other young kid who wanted to be an actor for the wrong reasons. Like I wanted to be famous. I wanted to have money. I wanted to be a star and all that stuff. That, like, I fell flat on my face before I even stopped. When I was 29, I took an acting class and I fell in love with it. I'm like, oh my God, I fell in love with it so much. And I said, I want to be an actor because I love it so much. I love it. And then when I graduated in 2003, and it was post 9/11, different world and everything, I said, now I want to be an actor because I want to have a voice. So it went through these three different stages, you know. And, you know, having a voice doesn't necessarily mean that I want to go and speak. I want to sit and give speeches. And, you know, it was just being, doing it and doing the right thing and inspiring others and opening doors and being an important part of the community. That's a voice, you know.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's the most important thing, is to love it, to be passionate about it. And that's it. And then you're passionate enough to go on the journey, because it's a tough journey. It's one that I don't recommend, you know, on for anyone. It's a very difficult journey. And you just have to go with it, and you have to believe in yourself. And there's going to be times where you don't, but you just have to find a way to remind yourself that you're good and you're going to be okay. And then you keep telling yourself that you're just one job away from finding that success, to getting up, because it's all like stages. You go through one stage and you make a little step and like, ah, this is great. Next level, you keep on going, you keep on moving up. And that's what happens. You just have to believe and know that it's going to happen. And it doesn't matter, late bloomer, early bloomer, whatever. The good thing about me now, where I got to a point where I'm at a place where, you know, I don't have to worry as much as if I found success within a month when I started, like 24 years ago, 25 years ago. It's just different, because I could have found success for other reasons, you know, and then I could have been, you know, pushed aside. Okay, let's move on to the next guy. So, yeah. And I've gotten a chance to grow, to become the artist that I am today. I got to learn more about myself, about work, about humanity, about life, about other people, you know? So,
Sure. I think you were even talking about, at some point, you know, you went broke after you had a business that you ran.
Yeah.
So, what's up with your store?
That's up.
Yeah, tell us about the business.
The diamonds are the same, but the people have changed.
So, business is good, probably growing. Have too much on your hands and need someone close to help you with it.
No, he doesn't, Dad. Don't do this.
Oh, Ramroom got fired from his little fancy job, huh?
I didn't get fired. We went under, so...
Under, huh?
Yeah, of course. I lost my business that I had with a friend after 9/11. We got in debt, and it was terrible. I had no one, you know. You know what I did? I went to school, and I ended up getting a scholarship because I was going to quit. And then I had three jobs I was doing that, you know, that no one else would do. No one else would do, because a lot of people will be too proud to do. I did them, and I just didn't ask for handouts, and I moved on. And that's what it's all about, how bad you want it. Because I could have gone, if I got into anything else, if I applied my tenacity and my drive to anything else, whether it was, let's say, the stock market, Wall Street, whatever, I would have been a gazillionaire, but I probably would have been miserable. You know, yeah, I've had a tough journey, but I'm in a good place right now.
I'm good now, man.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
And it's like, if you ask someone, if I ask someone a question, or someone, a young actor, like, do you, and I'm not going to ask you this, put you on the spot, but I'll ask and answer it. Like, yeah, someone, you know, you have the opportunity to choose between being a good actor or a successful actor. Which one would you choose? You'd be surprised how many people say successful. But successful doesn't necessarily mean you're good, but good can lead to success. And successful means somebody can get an opportunity. Now, you could be terrible, but you just write for something and you work, and then you're done. You'll just toss aside and they don't care about you. Then, so successful doesn't mean anything, as if that is what drives you, you know what I mean? Just to be successful, because you could be good. Like, if Rami didn't happen and I didn't start getting all this attention for Rami and all the other work, I had a really actually very good career, and I was very content. I was working all the time, doing enough work. People knew me in the community. I would do guest spots here and there. I ran one of the most prestigious acting schools in the world. I was the admin director there, and it was a very flexible job, so I never had to worry about an income. And I was very content with that. I was very happy. And to me, I found my success, you know? Mm-hmm. But then all this other stuff started happening, and with my writing too as well, and all that. So I tell people, you just gotta love it. Ask yourself why you want to do it first, and then understand that nothing is easy. You cannot, it's one of those things, you can't put a time limit on this career, because while you're one job away from elevating yourself, you don't know if that one job is going to come after year two, five, 10, 15.
So what if your parents are really bugging you, either when it comes to the major you choose in college or the job you choose after college? You know, they want you to go down a safe track, and that, you know, yeah, that's the parents' right.
So yeah.
What can you do with that?
Well, It's first of all, in our culture, it's a fact. Like, you know, nobody will push you towards this career path. There's, you know, doctor, engineer, basically, not even lawyer for Arabs, like doctor, engineer. And
nowadays, also computer scientists, but that just opened up.
And all that, anything that's like can be, it's a twofold thing. Part of it is because of like also, you know, prestige is so important, but it's also comes from their worry and their care, because they want, you know, parents want their children to have an easier career path and easier life. And that's the same thing too in America too. It doesn't, that same thing exists in America, because what is the American dream? An American dream is you get to go to college, you graduate, you meet your sweetheart, you get a great job, you get married, you buy a house, have a few kids, take a nice vacation once a year. That's the American dream. That really is. To just live a great life that's so safe. Becoming an actor is not a safe career choice. It's riddled with pain and disappointment, and you have to have a strong head on your shoulders to deal with it, to deal with the rejection. It's one thing to deal with, you know, rejection once in a while, but if you're constantly dealing with rejection until you hear that one yes, it takes a toll on you, and you have to learn how to process that. And it's not about having thick skin or whatever, because I don't feel like actors should have thick skin, because you don't want that to spill into you as an artist and then take away the most precious part of you, as the sensitivity and your vulnerability and all that stuff. But you just have to learn how to deal with it. You don't have to learn how to take it in and understand that, okay, this is part of the process.
Okay, so they're now at this point graduated, and they're choosing between a career in whatever their parents want them to do, finance, tech, whatever, science. But they also want to try acting. Like, that's really what they're passionate about. What should they do? Should they do both? One?
Well, first of all, when you do decide to pursue acting, it's always good to have a steady career or income coming in. So you can be a banker. You can pursue acting on the side. I advise people that it is a craft, and you really need to study it. So take an acting class, see if you like it first, you know, and then find a nice program and join it and do it while you study, while you're working. So you need to prep yourself for this industry. And the only thing that you have control of one thing. You don't have control about your aging, how you're going to look, the salt and pepper. You can't control any of that stuff. You can't control that, right? You can control one thing, is your command of your craft. And that doesn't, once in a blue moon, somebody will just like be exceptional. You know, there'll be a Marlon Brando, there'll be a this and that, but it's a craft that you need to learn. You need to learn how to, because it's all about you. You need to learn how to, who you are first as an artist, and that comes with training. So I do recommend people to take their time, take a class, see if you like it, and find the right path. And then you'll have your job, stability, and then you can just pursue this on the side and do it. And if you're lucky, if you have a flexible job or you get a job, you're allowed to go and stuff like that. And I find many, many, many places nowadays are more flexible than they were before, especially now with people working from home and stuff like that. So I would say do that. Don't quit your job to fully pursue. You have to know when to leave. When, okay, now I'm ready to leave. It's like buying a house. You don't get, like, there's a whole thing, like, if let's say you get a big TV show and like, oh, I made so much money, I'm gonna buy a house. No, don't wait till you get season 3 and then buy a house, you know. So because you can work for 1 year all the time, and then you can stop and, oh my god, where's the work? Like, I didn't work a lot last year after we stopped Rami, and it was like a little worrisome, not so worried, but it was like, yeah, but I know how to deal with it differently.
Yeah, because, you know, you're more established.
Got to do it. Do the right thing. Get an education. Train. Everyone I know who's like, you know, Rami trained, went through a program. May Kalamai went through a program. We all went through the same program. And
what's the program?
It's at the William Esper Studio. It's one of the best training programs, like literally like studio programs in the world.
Where is it located?
It's in the city. It's in Midtown. It's in New York City. People can just Google it. Mention my name on there, they'll, you know, it will be good too. Only if they're serious. Just put my name down if you're very serious about this.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So
that really is the breakdown, man. Thank you. Yeah.
You got it, man.
Because people, like, there's a lot of people that don't even know where to start.
You got to start. I mean, it starts with you first. You have to really want to do it. And it might be for the wrong reasons in the beginning, but as long as you find out it's for the, you know, you don't want to be like I've asked people, why do you want to be an actor? And somebody say, like, because I want everyone to know who I am. I'm like, I have zero interest in talking to that person because that person will never understand anything that I'm going to tell them. Any advice I give them does not go with their thread of thought and how they believe that what they want. Somebody tell you, oh, I want to be famous. I'm like, yeah, okay. Go, you know, jump into traffic and scream something, whatever, blah, blah, blah. Push someone into a car, do something terrible, and you'll be on the cover of every paper tomorrow. You know what I'm saying? Or go try to climb the Times building, and you'll be on the cover of every, you'll be famous for 5 minutes. So fame means nothing.
Yeah. So I'm interested in your journey, because you even had such a deep crisis with the identity thing that you didn't even go by your name anymore.
Yeah.
I actually know a lot of people who do that. So can you run me through that?
Yeah. But I did the opposite of what everyone else did after 9/11. But it started because I was born in England, and I grew up in England up until I was 10, and I didn't speak Arabic. I was a little English boy. And then we moved to Syria, and then I had to learn, you know, another language, adjust to a new culture. And then I moved to America when I was like 20. And it was very difficult. I came here, I was already very open-minded to everything, because I was, my whole life in Syria, what kept me going was my connection to pop culture and everything. And, you know, and I became that guy, you know, like everyone would come to me for movies, this and that. I was the one who started the breakdancing on the street. I did all these things. So I was very connected to pop culture. So when I came to New York, it was I was in awe, but it was an easier adjustment for me. But yeah, every time somebody would ask me, not every person, to be fair, but the majority of people, when they would ask, oh, what kind of name is that? You know, I'm like, oh, it's an Arab name. It's Middle Eastern. And you see the reaction would change, and, you know, and it was not, didn't feel good. And people would always be talking about, like, you know, I had long hair. I didn't have a haircut for 3 years. Like, my hair was so long. I was into rock and roll and everything, hanging out with these crowds, and, you know, whenever something would happen in the world and everything, everyone would be like, fuck the Palestinians and terrorists and Arabs and blah, blah, blah. And I had to hear that all the time, because everyone thought I was just a white guy from, you know, and so then I started working at a car service company in Brooklyn, and had a major incident happen there with a client who called me a terrorist because I'm Syrian. And I changed my name, and I said, you know, Laith means lion, which is Leo. And so I'm Leo. I became Leo. Lived in Bay Ridge. I was Leo from Bay Ridge. And, you know, I started talking like a little bit like Italians, you know, and I just adjusted them. And nobody cared. Nobody asked me where I was from. Nobody gave a shit. I was Leo. But then 9/11 happened. It was incredible, because the amount of hate that I was surrounded by wherever I went, and I understand a lot of people were in pain. I was in so much pain about it. And I excuse a lot of good people who were speaking out of anger. You know, there's some good people, they just couldn't help themselves, they were saying. But I got a mix of all the good people that I knew and just terrible people who just took it as an opportunity to say, I told you, let's get rid of Arabs. Let's get, you know, they're terrorists. They all want to get rid of us, and they blah, blah, blah. They want to kill us all. I kept on hearing so many things, like wherever I go to my building, you know, and the people in the front, they're talking about we should nuke the Middle East and get rid of all Arabs. Where I went in the volunteer line, and people were chanting stuff I don't even want to repeat here. And then the next day I woke up and I'm like, you know what? Fuck Leo. I'm Laith. And I became Laith from Syria. So, and that was when I started embracing myself and changing and all that. So it was kind of a little bit in reverse. And after 9/11, because everyone started going the opposite. Everyone who's Mahmoud or Muhammad changed their name, like Muhammad will become George or Harry or whatever. Literally, all my friends like, your name is Khalid. And now, oh no, I go by Harry now. Literally, the truth. Wow. So from Khalid to Harry, I'm like, dude, you don't look like a Harry. At best, you look like a Jose. So, so go with Jose, man. Harry. It's going to raise more questions, you know, like, Harry, where are you from? Where, what are you going to say? But yeah, that's
a really smart question.
That's the story, man. That's what happened.
Oh man, that's awesome. That shows like that's great, man. You show a lot of grit with that stuff, because that's one thing I would say I can highlight about your life as someone who's viewed it is grit. Like, it's rather than when things got tough, that's actually when you came out and shined. And yeah, a lot of people can say that.
You know, as an artist, do this several, a couple, I mean, so many, but from my time, there were two artists that I idolize. I love them. One, Waleed Zaitar and Omar Matwelli. And between all of us, like, they kind of paved the way for me. And then all of us, we just paved the way for everyone today, because we did all the shit work. We did all the stuff. And now, if you're an Arab American or just an Arab actor living in America working, and the opportunity, you have more opportunities than when what we did. Like at one point in the beginning, I didn't have much of a choice. Like, my first role ever on TV, where I got made a lot of money, paid a lot of my debt back, and, you know, did a couple episodes of this show, and I played a terrorist. And it was a painful celebration, because I celebrated it for so many reasons. I celebrated with my friends. Like, as an actor, you have your first line on TV, which is a big, big accomplishment. Very difficult to do, to get that first one. And I made money, and I got into the union and all these things. But yet, at the expense of, like, exploiting my culture, exploiting religion, exploiting all that stuff in a negative way. But I knew it was part of the plan. It was part of the plan. I have to do it now. And then I'll get to the point where I don't have to. And I did. I will never do anything like that again. I don't regret doing any of that, because it's part of my journey. It's so funny, because my line, I always tell the story. My first job, that job I told you about, I had one line. I was in it a lot, you know, doing bad stuff and dying and all that stuff. But I had one line, and my line was literally, I've been interrogated, and then I scream it out loud. They made me scream it out so loud. I said, Allahu Akbar. So bad. It was so terrible. And, you know, that word, Allahu Akbar, and it, again, doesn't matter what your religion is, it's a beautiful word, because it just, you use it. It's one of those words you use any context. One of them is taken out of context by radicals and stuff like that. But that's the one that everyone wants to analyze, and everyone uses that as a base of reference in the West. So fast forward, I don't know, 20 years later, I'm in Miss Marvel. And the first time you hear, I don't know if you've seen Miss Marvel, but if you remember in the second episode when I'm introduced, first my voice is introduced. When they're in the mosque and they're praying, and you hear my voice underneath, and they're very low, very peaceful, very beautiful. Allahu Akbar.
Allahu Akbar. Allahu Akbar. A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
And so it's funny how Allahu Akbar made a full turn, you know, and that meant a lot. And even in Miss Marvel, was incredible, because there was a moment, and I do something at the end that was pretty groundbreaking. And I asked them, can I do this? This is very traditional. And they allowed me to do it. And it was like, I couldn't believe they actually ended up using it.
I think there's a huge lesson in what you just said there. Sometimes you have to be wise in what hill you die on, because sometimes you got to lose some battles in order to win the overall war. And, you know, another thing that I reflected on based off what you said is, subhanAllah, I think that because it bothered you, even though you kept going and understood why you had to do it and so forth, but it bothered you, at least how I perceive Allah to be, I feel like Allah you know, didn't want to upset you or leave it at that. So he made it come for a full circle. That if it didn't bother you, if you were like, oh yeah, Allahu Akbar is Allahu Akbar, maybe you wouldn't have gotten that one moment to really be able to mend it in your own self. Allahu Akbar, you know, like Allah gave you that chance again, in a way.
Yeah, I can see that. It's everything's meant to happen, man.
Party's over there. What are you doing out here all by yourself?
Do you agree with everyone about our new masked neighbor?
Do you?
Thought it would be cool to have a superhero who actually fights for us. But I don't know, maybe she's just making things worse.
I doubt that boy from the minaret would agree.
So how does she convince everyone that she's good?
Good? It's not a thing you are, Kamala. It is a thing you do.
You know what's so interesting about you is that you know, mashallah, you're 53 years old, and you have the energy of a 20-year-old, dog. And I love that. Like when I see your stuff, and you just give off. You don't. When I was shocked when I 53 ain't even old now. Like
yeah.
So, but yeah. Where you get that energy from, man?
It's all here, man. This is what's. Stays young. If this stays young, nothing else matters. And don't take yourself too seriously. Be serious about what you do, but don't take yourself too seriously, if that makes any sense.
What do you mean by that? Because I've heard that before. I think even my dad's told me that advice before. So
if I'm going to say, like, I'm 53, I can't do this, I can't do that, I should be this, I should be that, and blah, 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 I shouldn't be talking to that person, this person. I'm all about, I love surrounding myself with good people. It doesn't matter how old they are. I love good people no matter where they're from, what their background, religion. I don't care. I just, and that keeps you feeling youthful all the time.
Women my age, they're giving up. You know, they look tired, like they need more water. You can see it in their face. But it's amazing. You know, sitting here with you, so energetic, young, and yet, very mature. You look like you traveled the whole world.
I work out. I haven't stopped, you know. Don't work out like when I was a bodybuilding competitor in the 90s, but I work out 4 or 5 times a week. I bike when it's nice. So I keep myself healthy and I feel good. And that's really important. That's part of what keeps you feeling youthful.
Your mother tell you that I was Mr. Egypt, runner-up?
No, she didn't tell me.
You look good, man.
I'm good.
you're more ripped than I am. I need to start going to the gym again.
Yeah, do it, man. No excuse.
No, exactly. Facts. I'm trying to pull up this picture of when you were a bodybuilder. Hold on. It is insane. Hold on. It might be online. Oh, and you were bald. You're not even bald now. Are you bald? Actually, you might be bald.
No, I got him. Yeah. But I shaved my head back then.
Why is that?
When I competed, I don't know. I shaved my head. It was the first time I shaved my head.
Show the muscles on your head too. Nah, man, you're jacked. You look like Vin Diesel a little bit.
So funny because when in early 90s, when I started working out and my journey to compete, and when I decided that acting is not for me, we trained at. This gym on 19th Street, an iconic gym, still there, but it's a different name, called Better Bodies. And that's where Vin Diesel trained. So we, you know, I've spotted him many times. He spotted me and he probably wouldn't remember me. But he didn't go by Vin Diesel, I think, back then. By his real name, I think it was Mark Vincent. Could be wrong, so I apologize if I'm wrong.
He was Mashallah, man. Did you win? I think you won a title from this.
I took second place Eastern USA here, and I did a few other shows, and I did. Then I won, went back to Syria in 96, and I won Mr. Syria. And I, you know, they wanted to send me to do the world championships, and I was going to do it. Then I just like wasn't happy. I just quit. It was just like I was not. It was too much work, and it was not. I was not happy. It was just doing it. Bodybuilding became. I love it, and I owe so much to it because it taught me a lot about dedication, about focusing, and how much like these bodybuilders, what they do in the gym, and they how, and what they, and the discipline they have with their diets and everything is unbelievable. People, everyone focuses on the dark side of it, the drugs and everything, but they forget about the training and the stuff like that. And so I learned a lot. I took all the discipline and I applied that to my life. But at the same time, bodybuilding for me, when I stumbled onto bodybuilding, it was an escape from what I really wanted to do. So it wasn't, it's almost like I had to prove that I can do something, you know, and I succeeded, but I wasn't happy. So then I, you know, made the brave decision and quit and took an acting class and loved it and said, okay, this is what I want to do.
It was like a step one of your acting career.
Yeah, it was actually. It's a big stepping stone, and it comes up in every conversation I have because, like, people are like, "Whoa, that was you!"
Yeah, man, you're huge. Like, wow, that's crazy. Okay.
All right, man.
Thank you so much, Leith. Thanks, Neckley, everyone.
All right.
Happy, so, appreciate you coming
updated,
on.
Keep me updated and let me know. We'll talk again soon.
Okay. All right. I'll give you a text or something.
Yeah, let's.
Bye, guys.